This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, everybody. Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes.
It's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richter.
The Monster Mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the Monster Mash. From my laboratory.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to a great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Tuesday evening inside the PTBN studios. And joining me, as always, my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode, I believe it is 467. Am I correct?
Sounds right.
Of the longest
466. Sounds wrong.
Four, doesn't matter, because it's still the longest running episodic gold standard. Yes, of course, we are on Tuesday this week because my PIC couldn't multitask last night between chewing his nails and trying to pay attention to the show. So, But all is well in the world because you'll be watching tomorrow night.
Series sure to be over, but I'm going to be okay. I vented all that out on the last Making the Cut with Aaron when we recorded as soon as Game 2 ended, and I was very vulnerable at that point, but I'm okay now. I'm okay. And speaking of vulnerable, we have a very special guest with us tonight, Scott.
We do, indeed.
Kelly Nelson is off. Well, I guess he could have maybe ended up doing the show. He took off last night because of the Canadian Thanksgiving, and then we didn't record because of the baseball game. Maybe he could have done this after all, but whatever. We'll give him the week off anyway. He joined us for Sammy Smith event a week ago. But joining us is a gentleman go way back with, and he's been here before for a couple of specials, but never for a proper episode of the podcast. And he's been listening since day one, and he, of course, is one of the 90210 bros. You heard him narrate a large chunk of the Christmas play from last year, and that is the one and only Mr. Tim Capel. Tim, how are you today?
Justin Scott, it is a privilege to be here and an honor to be asked to be here. I did not have to campaign or grovel, debase myself sexually or otherwise. But, I thought how flattering it would be to actually be invited on the show proper, the premier Place to Be podcast. So,
well, being on that Christmas special pretty much took care of your dignity anyway. So,
absolutely.
You don't have to worry about it at this point.
Yeah, I should preface, I'm not above those things by any means. I just, it's so flattering. And
I guessed it on your show before you guessed it on mine for a theme. Survey says, so there you go.
Yes, another great reminder.
Yeah.
So perhaps apologies are in order to Kelly tonight. I have big shoes to fill.
Didn't even think to, but you had already been booked, so whatever, he'll deal. So Scott, what's the deal for tonight? Where are we, sir?
This evening, JR, we're heading actually, Tim, you're sitting in Kelly's desk, so don't touch the Lanny McDonald bobblehead. We are back in our home office after being in, my home state, last week. So let us go now to January 19th, 1987, our first Madison Square Garden live event house show, JR, of the new year. So let's see if, I knew 1986 we had some hits or misses. Let's see, what this show brings us. It is January 19th. It is a Monday. And the roster was split again, this time in three cities.
Wow.
Of course, we have a cavalcade of superstars this evening. Another hunk of the roster was at the Augusta Richmond County Civic Center in Augusta, Georgia. The only three matches that Mr. Cawthon has. Blackjack Mulligan took on Terry Gibbs. The New U.S. Express took on the Foreign Legion. I feel like I've been wrestling for about like 9 months.
Yeah.
And Ricky Steamboat took on your World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion, the Macho Man Randy Savage. Interesting. The other third of the roster was at the – I'm going to have to ask Mr. Greenhouse to look this up. They were at the Pershing Auditorium in Lincoln, Nebraska. I'm curious if that's on the campus of – because I don't know what else is in Lincoln, Nebraska besides Big Red. So I wonder if that's the basketball arena or whatever. The Pershing Auditorium, 4,332. So there we go. Here's your card. The Honky Tonk Man pinned Pedro Morales. Wow, Pedro lays down in Lincoln. He can't do it at the Garden, though. The Karate Kid and Little Coco defeated Little Tokyo and Lord Littlebrook, so they kind of went around the circuit with their awesome hot midget tag feud. Jack Kruger defeated Bill Ellis, who subbed for Moondog Spot. I have no idea who either of those
what
guys
the are. Pulled those guys Jake out of the cornfield.
I know. Probably linebackers. Jake Roberts fought King Kong Bundy to a double countout. Interesting, Jake fighting a heel. B. Brian Blair and Jumbo Jim Brunzel, the Killer Bees, defeated Don Morocco and Bob Orton Jr. And Tito Santana defeated somebody in a steel cage match. We won't tell you who that is because he'll be debuting later on down the line. So there you go. So they were in Augusta, Georgia, and they were in Lincoln, Nebraska on top of...
pretty spread out. You don't usually see three rosters spread out that far, you know?
Yeah.
Usually we'll get like two in the same city, like matinee, evening show or something, but...
Yeah, exactly. Very, very strange. Speaking of matinees, we're gonna think about that today because we looked up. This is Martin Luther King Day in 1987. So
the first, or second, get the pop culture, what did D'Amato say that this is it was ratified in 1986? Yeah.
Yes, it's the second Martin Luther King Day, and there's a reason why we're bringing that up, and I'll get more into that when we get to the pop culture report later. So, JR, anything to add to the fun and frivolity before we kick off?
What a fucking tease on January 10th. Episode of Superstars, Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth were guests on Piper's Pit. During the segment, Piper gave Savage a ringside ticket to watch Ricky Steamboat's return to the ring the following week. The 117 Superstars was a very big episode. We had the official kicking off of the Hulk Hogan Andre the Giant's dalliance in a segment on Piper's Pit. Jack Tunney presented Hulk Hogan with a trophy for being world champion for 3 years. Ricky Steamboat returned to action, pinning Barry O in under 3 minutes. Demolition, a brand new tag team, made a debut with Randy Cully, formerly Moondog Rex, playing the role of Smash. Following Hercules' big win over Jim Parks, Bobby Heenan challenged Billy Jack Haynes to break out of the full Nelson. When he came to the ring, Haynes pushed Heenan and was attacked by Hercules, who hooked on the hold. And that's it. That's all we got. So, why don't we head down to the Garden? And you already knew that the tone was going to be a rough one because Mean Gene is back alongside Gorilla Monsoon to open the
Jesus
year.
Jesus Christ.
So right out of the gate, if you weren't feeling rough already, no one goes to an MSG show. This is number two. And the number three whammy to finish us off is our opener.
At
least part of it. As making a couple of, well, one debut and I guess one kind of return. Brad Rangins is making his debut. We'll talk about him for a moment. Born in Appleton, Minnesota. In December 1953, during his high school years as a multi-sport athlete, winning awards in football, wrestling, track, and field, was friends in high school with Eric Bischoff. Rangins was a member of the 76 and 80 Greco-Roman wrestling team, won gold medals in 1975 and 79 Pan American Games, and began his pro wrestling career in 1980 under Vern Gagne and Billy Robinson in the AWA. Primarily wrestles enhancement talent here before moving on to New Japan in 1989, retired in 1995 due to knee issues, and he is taking on Sirs. Legendary? No, probably not.
yeah, you would, yeah, like you think he's legendary.
The one and only Frenchie Martin. Not his, I don't believe it's his MSG debut. He had, I think it was. I think it is his MSG debut. So, Jean Gagne began his career in 1971 in Quebec, wrestling for Stampede Wrestling, of course. Moved his way through Canada, worked in Puerto Rico as well. Actually had a 60-minute time limit draw with Ric Flair while in Puerto Rico, so enjoy that one. Won the NWA British Empire Commonwealth title in 1978. Debuted in the WWF in October of 1986, initially full-time wrestler, enhancement talent, and then began to host a studio show, Le Studio Talk Show, in Canada on Superstars. And then he will shift to a different role, which we'll cover. So a couple of debuts here to open things up, and we're off to a very rough start in 87 between Gene and Frenchie. It just looks as annoying as ever. Rangins making his debut as well to defend the U.S. against this worthless French-Canadian. I thought Frenchie looked about 60 here, by the way. So
oh, there's no doubt. Yeah.
I don't think he was. Let me look quick at his age. He was born in 1950. So he would have been, what, 37 here?
37?
Yeah. He actually passed away at 60. He just died last year. I didn't even realize that. Bladder and bone cancer. That sucks.
37. He looked like he was 77.
Yeah, for sure. Gene puts over
a theme throughout the show.
Yes, it definitely is. Gene puts over Brad, who he knows from back in Minnesota, of course, talking about all his credentials. We open with a lockup and a stalemate as the two trade some holds while working the arm. They put over Brad as an All-American, and Gorilla discusses how well-traveled Frenchie is. Brad grabs a side headlock as Gorilla talks about the importance of having an amateur background, saying you'd be left like a pile of garbage without it. Brad continues to maintain control as Gorilla rips the ref for getting in the mix. Gorilla talks about Frenchie's brother, who's also his former tag team partner. Brad hammers away in the corner and sends Frenchie over the top with a monkey flip before going to the arm. We get some discussion on the importance of leg strength, as well as some chatter about goose hunting, as the match has come to a halt. Frenchie cheats to take over and empties out all his heel tricks. Brad breaks out another monkey flip to force Frenchie off of him, sending that Canadian bastard to the floor. Frenchie returns and talks some shit as we reset. Brad keeps Frenchie off balance with a flurry, and Martin rolls back outside. Frenchie's hurting. He slowly gets back in and lands a sucker punch to take over and goes to a chin lock. Gorilla and Gene talk about Brad's potential and how he could be more successful as he continues to learn the pro game. Frenchie's in full control, lands a hot shot. Brad bails to regroup, but Frenchie keeps nailing him out to keep him on the floor. Brad forces his way back in and hammers away, getting a small package for two, and then whiffs on an elbow off the middle rope, and Frenchie gets a really lazy cover for two. Brad comes back with a belly-to-belly and hits a shoulder block off the middle rope for the win. The first two-thirds of this was real dog shit, but I thought the last couple of minutes were solid, especially the finish. I thought Brad looked fine, but Frenchie's just useless, as he slowly meandered through old-school heel offense that just put everyone asleep no one cared about seeing. I went half a star just for Brad's energy and for the last minute or two. What did you think of this one, Scott?
I also gave it a half star. You ready for the runtime? You ready to squirm?
Ugh, yeah.
16:49.
Oh, God.
That's fucking brutal.
Felt like 116:49.
It really did. A few points. Number one, even as bad, what made it worse was, on top of the fact that it was Mean Gene, who's utterly terrible doing this, it even seemed like Gorilla wasn't totally on. Like, like the first couple minutes of this match, they seemed like they were kind of off their game. They were kind of fumbling through their lines, and they didn't seem like ready, it seemed like. It was very strange. It didn't seem like they were ready. I wonder if Gene was a last-minute thing, because it didn't seem like that Gorilla was ready to have him as well, you know, instead of maybe Jesse or Alfred. So it definitely seemed like the first couple minutes they were off. You know, I'm looking it up, and he does it later in the show. I think we got to finally investigate this. Maybe we'll have to have D'Amato on. What the hell is the deal with Gorilla constantly giving Gil Roman shade?
Yeah,
no, I mean, it's starting to get aggravating now.
No, I enjoy it because all these referees suck, so I'm okay. But
well, that's true. And, you know, it's funny you say that, because I found, like, I forgot which message board it was. But they were talking about, like, how each promotion or territory back in the day treated their referees. Like, they were saying, like, in the NWA, you know, what's his name? Not Larry Young, whatever his name is. You know, that referee, the referee everybody likes, and Earl when he was there, like they were treated with reverence.
Tommy Young?
Meanwhile, Tommy Young. Thank you, Tommy Young. Meanwhile, WWF referees are all fucking garbage. That's really crazy. Anyway, the posturing and everything was bad. When you mean a lazy pin, is that the one where, like, pretty much Frenchie shoved his junk in Brad's face during that pin?
Yeah, he just kind of lays on him all fucking.
He lays his fucking crotch
in his
face.
Looks like he's eating a croissant and sipping wine like a piece of shit.
Yes. Yeah, well, he drops his fucking sweaty French junk in fucking Brad's face. But I mean, Gene, and if you didn't know Brad Rangins was from Appleton, Minnesota, well, after this match, since Mean Gene said it like 63 times, you pretty much got it down. Yeah, I mean, everything about this was bad. Brad Rangins needed a guy that he could grapple with. He couldn't sit there, because that's his strength. Brad Rangins is not a personality guy. He's not an energy guy. He's a good worker. He's a typical Vern, you know, AWA guy who can put on a good match if you have a guy in there that can kind of go with him. And this was not the right guy to have, a typical old school WWF kind of fucking around heel. It didn't work for Brad. If you really wanted to get this off to a good start, you need to have a guy that could kind of go with him, and it slowed him down, and all the shit in the outside. It didn't work. It almost was a dud because I thought Brad's finisher was really good. And the last minute or so definitely was fast, but the previous, yeah, like the first like 15 minutes was utter trash. I gave it a half star as well, Tim.
Yeah, it sounds like we all watched the same match. I put down a half star for it, too. And, I mean, the moves they're using here are fine enough in theory, but the execution just comes across as wonky. I mean, JT talked about that lazy pin, but there's, like, these lame, sloppy arm bars, and Rangins does, like, a half a cartwheel at one point. there's a top wrist lock spot, but you know your favorite Frenchie Martin can't bridge, so that's going to look like shit. It was just loose, really weak looking offense throughout this thing. So aside from that finishing stretch, not a lot here.
No.
16 minutes is asking a bit much for a Frenchie Martin Brad Rangins match. So yes.
Yeah, not a shrewd idea at all. And it, you know, I don't know. We've seen Nick Kaniski, like he looked pretty good, and now they bring Rangins in, and they kind of give him the same spot, the same style, and yeah, they're just sandbagging with Frenchie's. It's not going to give him much. Frenchie's working a spot show from fucking Manitoba, 1957 heel offense. You know what I mean? Just meandering around, punching the throat, raking the, you know, like, yeah, he had a couple flashes here and there, but it's just not what you want from an opening match. I know people are getting settled in and maybe not watching, but still, you want some excitement in the opener. And this, you know, he's the anti-energy Frenchie Martin.
No, he absolutely was. Brad Rangins definitely needed a better guy in this slot, particularly if you were going to go 17 minutes. Yeah. I mean, really.
And I wondered that too. This is like the quintessential folks are still filing in match. That's the only explanation I could see for putting it on first.
I just wish Frenchie had his monocle so Brad could punch it back into his eye. All right, we head back to the ring here. Mean Gene hops in to present a very special award to Howard Finkel for his 10 dedicated years of service as MSG ring announcer. The crowd gives Fink a big ovation. He's kind of surprised, and then thanks Gene and the crowd. Seems a little broken up just a bit, caught off guard. And it's funny because I'm so, I don't know how you guys felt, but I'm like so conditioned to like just Fink just being like a dumping ground, you know, just like a,
I know,
you know, just a guy that they beat on for you. I just was waiting for like the shoe to drop where they like hit him with it or a lie. And it's not really at all. Like I was waiting for them to fuck with him and they don't, they treat him well, but we're just so used to over the past couple of decades where he just gets treated like a goof. So, do you guys have any quick thoughts on this or?
Well, I'm used to Fink as the pervert from like, what was it? SummerSlam 2001 or two, yeah, with his little exchange with Trish Stratus. So, I'm like, all right, are we going to get like, who would the equivalent? Well, there's no equivalent to that in 1987, but like, is he going to get into this whole fourth McIntyre and just make an ass of himself? That's unfortunately.
Nah, it's a great moment. I mean, I remember the guy with the really thick bottle Coke bottle glasses that did the ring announcing on the older MSG house shows, you know, JR, if you remember the old network adventure ones, the slogs, and Fink just, you know, with his brown tuxedo, just very cool, very cool. 10 years, very nice. And then he couldn't get the mic to work, which I thought was funny. I thought Mean Gene was going to like sing him Tutti Frutti or something, and make it even worse. But no, good moment for Fink.
In 10 years in 1987.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep, he started in 76, early 77. Before that, it was the like that guy with the Coke bottle glasses that did it like in 74 or 75. Yep. So, good for Fink.
10 years, long time.
It's a long time.
All right. Next up, we get some tag team action. It's a new team for us to check out, the Can-Am Connection, taking on our old friends, the Dream Team, Brutus Beefcake and Greg Valentine. The Can-Ams, made up of Rick Martel and Tom Zenk, who's making his MSG debut. Zenk started wrestling in 1984 for the AWA before moving to the Pacific Northwest territory of the NWA. At the request of Rick Martel, Zenk moved to Montreal to work for the IWA, where they formed the Can-Am Connection. They would then move to the WWF in late 1986, and this is Rick Martel's return to MSG for the first time in 5 years. Martel, of course, pretty legendary from a family of wrestlers, debuted at age 16, was already a skilled amateur, wrestled all around the world before debuting in the WWF in 1980, formed a tag team with Tony Garea. They won the tag team titles from the Samoans, had a second reign where they defeated the Moondogs before losing to Mr. Fuji and Mr. Saito. They would challenge multiple times before Martel left in April of 82. He headed to the AWA, defeated Jumbo Tsuruta to win the AWA World Heavyweight title. His reign lasted quite a while, well over a year. Had some matches with Ric Flair and others before losing the title to Stan Hansen. And then he shows back up here in late 1986, teaming with Zenk as the Can-Am Connection. So that's their background. And now we head to the match. Dream Team hit the ring with Johnny V. Gorilla reminds us of the nightmare in Rosemont. As always, Gene says they haven't recovered. So, I mean, this has been some time now. Gorilla has literally talked about this every time we've seen the Dream Team since WrestleMania 2. About the nightmare and the Rosemont. I mean, at some point, you're going to think they're over at Gorilla. They've won matches. They've challenged other titles. They look okay. Gorilla says the Dream Team is low-key for the rest of 86, which is funny because we've seen them in like big matches all through MSG. It's, I don't know, odd comments. Gene says Johnny V went to therapy after that loss. Massive pop for MSG. Debut of Can-Ams as Martel and Zenk jog to the ring, fired up. Gorilla calls them real handsome youngsters. As Gene reminds us that Martel is a former tag team champion. Hammer and Martel open up with Martel quickly grabbing control and working the arm. Zenk tags in and keeps targeting the arms. Gorilla says the Can-Ams are destined for gold. Hammer gets a hip toss but whiffs on an elbow and Zenk goes back to the arm. Hammer sneaks free and tags in Beefcake as V pops in on commentary and rips on the Can-Ams, questioning what nationality Zenk is. Johnny says the Dream Team is about to climb another mountaintop. Hammer tags back in, but Zenk is all over him, hitting an atomic drop for two. Martel tags in and keeps the pressure on the arm, then hot shots Martel across the top and tags Beefcake, who slugs away, hoists Martel up over his head, and Hammer cracks him off the middle rope. Beefcake hits a backbreaker for a Hammer near fall, and the Dream Team continue to punish Martel. Martel lands a huge right hand to find an opening, but Beefcake tags in and cuts him down and goes to a chin lock. His Gorilla says Brutus is one of the most improved wrestlers over the last few years. Gene notes that the Can-Ams recently toured Japan as Martel makes a hot comeback, leading to a backslide for two. Beefcake recovers and lands a boot to regain control as Johnny comes back and says close only counts in hand grenades and cantaloupes, which made me laugh for some reason. Hammer tags in and Martel turns the tide with a quick flurry but ends up missing a charge in the corner, cutting himself off. Gorilla says it takes Hammer 15 minutes to get cranked up and that he's a sadistic individual. Hammer gets a suplex for two and tags in Beefcake, who goes to a bear hug. Hammer returns and goes to a figure four, but Martel blocks it. Hammer goes to the eye and maintains control, getting a roll-up for two. Beefcake tags in, and Martel punches through him and dives for the tag to Zenk, who comes in red-hot, mowing through everyone with drop kicks and right hands. Beefcake cuts him down with a hard clothesline and tags Hammer, who gets a three-quarters Nelson and grinds Tom on the mat. Hammer goes to an abdominal stretch and then a gut breaker before tagging Beefcake, who pounds the midsection and then gets an inverted atomic drop. Things break down and we get some chicanery, but the Dream Team can't put Zenk away. So Zenk makes the tag. The referee misses it, but doesn't allow it. Beefcake levels Zenk off the middle rope, but Hammer misses an elbow drop. He keeps control with the figure four as Johnny decks Martel on the outside. Zenk hangs on to the hold until Martel slingshots in with a splash and covers Hammer for the win, despite being the illegal man. Gorilla and Gene say Zenk is pretty hurt from the figure four as the crowd has gone bonkers. A really fun match, a hot start for the Can-Ams. They were given a lot of time to tell their story. The crowd was really into the whole thing. The Dream Team was rock solid, as always. I like the double heat segment where you thought the finish was coming when Zenk came in, but they quickly turned it around. Strong tag action, nice addition to the division with the Can-Ams. I went 3 stars, Timothy. How about you?
I went 3 stars. How about that?
Nice.
This is a match that you look at and think, well, that should have been your hot opener, right?
Or main event.
or even main event. But the always good seeing the Can-Ams, of course. And I guess you guys, this is the first time we're seeing them for a start of the year MSG show. And what we have is a pretty well-structured tag match with sort of that, you know, Southern tag type formula with really two heat segments on the faces, quick tags by the heels. Hard to go wrong with that, especially when you've got guys as talented as the participants here. I would be remiss in not pointing out that JT, you coined one of my favorite descriptors in talking about Greg the Hammer Valentine. And a few years ago in the earlier iteration of the Place to Be podcast, you know, it always comes up about how Valentine never really ages. You know, he's aged really well. He's looked the same across decades just about. And you said, well, it's not so much that he's aged well, it's that he was young poorly. And I think that was somewhat on display here.
Yes.
Didn't look up his age, but I don't think he was that advanced, but you know, he's just, like I said, he's always kind of looked like a turtle. That's just the
he's like Arn Anderson, just came out of the womb looking old. He was born in 51, so 36, not even 35 at this point. 35.
Right, yeah. And he looks the same today. So, yeah, I really definitely enjoyed this match. And they had a false finish, too, which you don't expect and get a lot. You know, back in especially at just a 80s MSG show with Zinc in the figure four, you figure that's probably going to end it in some form or fashion. But the faces prevail to a pretty tremendous pop, in fact.
I give it 3 stars as well. Your total runtime, JR, do you think longer or shorter than the first match?
I'm gonna say a scooch longer.
What do you think, Tim?
A little bit longer, but felt shorter.
Okay. Well, as I said, the opener was 16:49. That debacle. This was 18:36. So pretty good, JR. Slightly more.
I can just tell by the length of my notes. That's how I can usually judge the match length.
There you go. They talked about Ricky Martel. I was doing the AWA way. Ricky Martel. This was his first MSG match since March 14th, 1982. Mm. He and Tony Garea defeated Charlie Fulton and the Executioner, who was Baron Mikhail Scicluna, at 7:28 when Garea pinned Fulton with a sunset flip. So this was Ricky Martel's first MSG match since March of 82. The match itself was fantastic. Great back and forth. Dream Team still, I mean, obviously they're fairly faded as a team, but still putting on great matches. Hammer looks good. And at least for once, it's not just lip service that the Beefer has matured and has looked great in the ring. Usually, they just, you know, Gorilla will say that just because he feels like saying that, but it actually is true. He said he had a great 1986, slowly learned, and might be ready for the next step. The timing on the end fall was rough, though. Like, it made Valentine look kind of weak. Like, he felt like that Martel had him hooked for what seemed like 15 seconds. And I think I was a little shaky on at the end. But otherwise, that was fantastic. Zink and Martel work really good together. Good workers. And, you know, Valentine and Beefcake, you can never complain about, particularly when they're on their game. Really good match. Good win for the Can-Ams. I think this effectively, I mean, in this instance, I think this effectively ends the Dream Team's usefulness as a tag team, which is unfortunate. But at the same time, I mean, they got a lot of mileage, almost, you know, 2 year, you know, a year and a half.
Yeah.
They've been stalwarts too
on the show, really, since they formed in, like, you know, even those early, remember that couple early times they teamed before becoming the Dream Team? Right after WrestleMania 1. So it's going to be kind of weird without them soon, because they've definitely been a big part of our show since we've rebooted. Like, they've been on almost every card, I feel like, in one way or another.
No, they definitely have. Whether they've been as a team or, you know, Hammer wrestles one, Beefer wrestles the other, and the matches have all been great. That's a shame. But, you know, the tag division's got to evolve a little bit in 87, and the Can-Ams are a good team to add, and they kind of beef up the division a little bit, because we had said many times, JR, throughout 86, that the tag division was a little thin and needs a little boost.
Mm-hmm.
And the Can-Ams definitely will do that. So 18:36, your total runtime. I give it 3 stars. It was an exceptional match, and kind of got the crowd back into it after that shit show at the beginning. So crowd's ready to go.
Until this next match.
Yes. I know.
Oh, boy. We have another debut, though. The Outlaw, Ron Bass, taking on Special Delivery Jones. The Outlaw making his MSG debut. Ronald Hurd began wrestling under the name Ron Bass in 1975, wrestled throughout the NWA, where different nicknames followed him depending on the territory he was in. He was the Outlaw, he was the Cowboy, and Oliver Bass. I guess maybe that's when he was in England. I'm not sure when Oliver came into play. In the early 80s, Bass primarily wrestled in Florida for Jim Crockett and Mid-Atlantic, joined the WWF in 1987 for a feud with Blackjack Mulligan. Of course, Mulligan eventually would leave before the feud got off the ground, go back to Florida, and Bass would hang around. We'll see him for quite a while before he retires in 1991. I say before this, most well-known for his stint, I think, on Crockett, you know, their weekly TV. He was feuding with Black Bart and stuff, right? So, I think he was a national champion or in the mix for that belt, too, or something like that.
Well, they were a tag team. They were the, the hell were they called? Crap, I don't remember now. But then they split up, and they actually wrestled at Starrcade 85. And
right,
he was around through at least the summer of 86
in NWA. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Because he was him and Black Bart wrestled at Starrcade 85, and he beat Black Bart, and then he had 5 minutes with JJ. So that was definitely, and he was a baby face.
Yeah, he turned face when they split.
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember the name of their team. Fuck.
Looking it up right here. The Long Riders.
Long Riders, that's it. I think they were like the U.S. Tag Team Champions or something like that. But
yeah,
Black Bart ended up being the national champion, I think, after Ron Bass left or something. But okay. Yeah, so there you go.
All right, so for the match, another MSG, and we're actually working in quite a lot of fresh talent here in late 86, early 87 as we turn things over. Jones has a fresh haircut looking around as Bass jumps him at the bell. He's just like literally just walking in circles looking at nothing as Bass jumps him. Bass keeps pounding and choking away as Gorilla says Blackjack Mulligan won't back down from the ruthless Bass. Bass keeps laying the wood, but Jones comes back with an elbow that sends Outlaw outside. Jones stays on top working a chin lock as Gene says special delivery. He's headed back to Australia soon. I love that we've seen none of it, but we know so much about this Australia trip with him and Paul Roma because we talk about it every fucking show now. Jones gets a crossbody for two and goes back to the headlock. Gorilla says SD has turned around Paul Roma's career, and Gene says we'll see more of them as a team to come. Jones is all over Bass, punching away and grinding headlocks until Bass cuts him off with a knee to the gut and hits a facebuster driver for the win. Not much here. Jones took way too much offense, though, I thought. The end, the finisher, was the only good spot of the match. Bass looked fine, and he has like decent presence. There should be a solid mid-carder. But I couldn't believe how much offense special delivery took in this one from Bass. I went dud on this, Scott. Did you think SD ate up too much of the match?
I definitely think he did. I actually gave it a half star. I actually didn't hate it that much. I mean, well, relatively speaking, I suppose. Your runtime, much shorter, obviously, than these other ones, 6:56. Yeah, I mean, I think this was a case where Ron Bass probably could have used another jobber like a Jerry Allen or somebody like that, you know, some other hump. I think he needed an effective squash here. I mean, SD, you know, did what he could, but it really went at a slow pace. Like I said, guys making their MSG debut should have easy squashes against bums, then move on to the SD Joneses. So I'm thinking that maybe Ron Bass should have had like a, I don't know, Jose Luis, well, he's already working. I don't know, just somebody else. Mm. And I think he'd have been all right. But I think SD took too much of this match. Kind of the same thing with Frenchie in the first match with Rangins.
But that's different. Like that's a heel. It's going a little bit longer. This was built like a squash. You know what I mean? This right. wasn't no, set up true. To be a competitive match. Like that kind of was. I don't know. I just as it like in that one, Rangins still got a bunch of offense in. This one, Bass got nothing, and then just wins the match at the end. You know, it was kind of weird
right.
the way they did it for a heel.
It was very weird. I thought the end wasn't bad. I kind of liked Bass's finisher. The finishers tonight have been pretty good so far. I liked Ron Bass's finisher. Looked pretty good. So I think that's what the half star's for, just for the finisher. Otherwise, not much here, Tim. What did you think?
I, about a year ago to the date, binge-watched like all of the Starrcades, and my first exposure to Ron Bass was Starrcade 84. Didn't make much of an impression at the time, but certainly, he was a presence on those early Crockett shows. So to see him here, he's sort of the inverse of Greg Valentine. He looks like he's aged 30 years since 1984. Not really sure what happened there, but as for the match, it's it doesn't have a lot to offer. I went at least a quarter star for the finisher, kind of a proto pedigree, if you will. Looked like it kind of fucked Jones up a little bit. Like, I think he had a bloody lip or a bloody nose afterwards. Like, maybe he wasn't prepared to take a front bump on that or something. Didn't know how to take the move, I'm not sure. But he was either selling really well or legit got his bell rung on that. So, but it was okay. It was short enough to be inoffensive. So I can't knock it too harshly.
I'm going to knock you harshly for...
When you were saying binge watch, I thought you were going to say you binge watched every SD Jones match.
Oh, Jesus, God.
We need SD Jones supporters. Come on. You got to do it.
Oh.
No. All right. Up next. Jesus. This is... Georgiano Steele taking on Mr. Wonderful, right. Paul Orndorff.
You know, we really could have done this while you were watching the game last night. I don't think it would have been that big of a problem.
Orndorff's out with Heenan still using Real American as those tensions are lingering with the Hulkster, but he's clearly been demoted a bit as his big feud winds down after Saturday's main event. Bobby reels a poster of Miss Elizabeth and carries it around the ring and then hides it as George Steele rumbles to the ring. Heenan holds it in Steele's face and tears it up as Animal looks at him dumbfounded and then chases him around. Orndorff attacks and kicks and slugs away at Steele on the ropes before shoving the torn poster on his face. Animal comes back with some biting and then runs Orndorff into the buckle before tearing it apart. Animal rams Orndorff into the Steele buckle and then chases Bobby outside into the locker room. Steele returns, dumps Orndorff to the floor to a pop, and tries to reassemble the poster. Orndorff returns and hammers away, taking back control. Orndorff grabs a camera cable and chokes Steele away with it as Gorilla bitches the ref for not calling a DQ. Gene calls the ref a bozo, but Steele makes a comeback and goes for the hammerlock. Heenan returns with another Liz poster. Steele chases him to the floor before grabbing a chair and whacking the ref with it to draw a DQ. Gorilla says he wishes the ref got caught with a full shot versus the light one that he got. Orndorff works over Steele, but Steele fights him off and chases him away. Usual Steele nonsense, but I will say this. It had better pacing than normal. I like the Liz poster stuff. I thought that was a nice touch, and it shows off the brain smarts. Orndorff definitely deserves better, though, and some kind of direction at some point. This is okay as a one-month time filler while they sort something out, but they need more. I actually went a star on this, which may be a record for a George Steele match for me. But this may be the best month of Steele's career since he's turned face. he had that decent match with Savage, Sonya's main event, and then this one here, which wasn't too bad. So a star for me. Tim, what'd you think?
I'll go a half a star. It's really more of a segment than a match, really. To be quite honest, at this point, Elizabeth, she just needs to get a fucking restraining order against Steele and Savage. I mean, you got, on the one hand, this explosive, possessive psychopath that is her main squeeze, and fucking Steele, who looks like he wants to show her crabs up close. I mean, it's awful that she has to put up with these two motherfuckers. So, like you said, it's time to move on from this, for God's sake. We had the blow off. What are we still doing here? And yes, Orndorff certainly does deserve better. I don't know. Maybe does he eventually? I know he's not on WrestleMania 3 coming up, but does he finally take some time off for that injury? I know he kind of pushed through it for the Hogan feud for the sake of the money, but you know, there's a case to be made that it's time to sort of put him on the shelf for a little bit and rehab. But
I don't think so. He looks like he's pretty active, at least through February, March. And I don't think he really takes any time off at all.
Yeah. I mean, hindsight's 2020.
Maybe April, May. It looks like he may take some time.
It's possible, yeah.
It looks like he goes March to June. Yeah, it looks like he takes April and May off.
Well, I guess that's something, but already, you know, that arm is showing no real muscle tone, and it's only going to get worse from there. So just feel bad for the guy because, I mean, that's a tough situation to be in. And, I mean, now it's easy to look back and say, okay, he was hurt, put your health above your, you know, your ego, but it wasn't just that. It was the money and the very real fact that he could lose his spot.
Right.
So, and I'm not sure that even today, guys, if they were getting reactions like Orndorff and Hogan were back then and making the money that they were making back then, that guys today would even go on the shelf. So,
right, not for that kind of injury. Concussion, maybe, yeah. But not for, you know, neck, where you can still work through it. It's just painful.
Yeah. So, in any case, yeah, not a lot to say for the match itself.
I gave this a dud. This was terrible. I felt bad for Orndorff. They said the official runtime was exactly 6 minutes. I think that's kind of fudging, but the whole Real American thing seems so dated now. He shouldn't even have come out with any music. Again, more Gil Roman trashing. The poster stuff was fine, but it really just took away from whatever kind of match they could have had. and I'm just getting so burnt out on George Steele in general. I feel like Orndorff's getting punished here. They couldn't really come up with anything better. It was just really bad. There's a lot of running around, not much in the way of actual moves, and then the stupid chair thing, which you couldn't even swing right, and it was a big mess.
I didn't mind the Liz stuff, though. I don't know. I thought you keep the Savage thing brewing, which I don't necessarily want that to continue, but it is. So they do a good job with that, and I thought it made Bobby look shrewd, like he's thinking outside the box and fucking with Steel. I don't know. I didn't mind it. We've seen a lot worse on these
shows than this. No, we have seen a lot worse, but I hated it. I think I'm more upset because I think Orndorff deserved better, even with the feud ending. So
yeah, I'm willing to give them like a month, and we'll see. You know, like I want to see if they find something for him after this.
Right. Okay. So 6 minutes your time on that match, and it was crap. Now we go backstage.
We do. Gorilla Monsoon's chatting with the King, Harley Race, about his match tonight. Bobby Heenan comes in a like a rain trench coat.
It was very strange. It was kind of odd.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're obviously admitting this is pre-recorded because they made it like he just arrived at the arena. Bobby comes in and says Gorilla talks to only him, not the King. Gorilla talks about signing his main event and how they tried to get JD to bow JYD. Duncan should bow down. JYD to bow down. Heenan says JYD made a mistake putting his hands on the robe and crown, and nobody puts their hands on the King. Heenan says in all arenas around the world, people are bowing down. And Ray says if JYD doesn't bow down, they'll carry his black carcass from the ring. Gorilla asks if the crown is on the line, and Bobby says they won't discuss race ever being beaten. Gene then talks to the Hart Foundation and Jimmy Hart about their tag match tonight. There's no title match tonight as Dynamite is out and being replaced by Billy Jack Haynes. The Harts have worked hard for this match and now got hosed. Everything seems a little bit fishy, they think. They aren't afraid of Haynes and have no issues with him, but now he's messed with the wrong dudes. And then Gorilla and Gene at ringside talk about Gene's recent work with the New York Giants Super Bowl championship, or soon-to-be Super Bowl championship, so NFC championship music video. They compare tonight's main event to the upcoming Super Bowl. So there you go. And that takes us to our next match as, Jerry Allen takes on Tiger Chung Lee. All the hard hitters coming out here in early 87.
Yes.
Big time post interview break filler match. Gorilla says Tiger Chung is always serious business as the newcomer Allen's bouncing around the ring looking fired up. Gorilla notes that Tiger Chung is the master of the martial arts, which isn't true as we know, Scott. Mm-hmm. Gene points out that he now wears boots. Gorilla thinks he must have injured his ankle at some point. Lee lands a hard blow to the head, but Allen punches back and grabs a side headlock. Lee comes back with a few shots. Allen reverses control and drops a leg for two before going back to a headlock. The two trade some offense as Gorilla says Tiger Chung's dropped about 20 pounds. He's working a bit quicker. Learned a lot from Mr. Fuji before they parted ways. Allen keeps grinding the headlock until Lee powers free and lays in some hard chops and forearms. Allen comes back with a slam, but Tiger Chung kicks him away and lays in some more strikes. Lee drops Allen with a hot shot, but Allen reverses a whip and sends the Tiger hard into the corner, punches away. Allen hits a sloppy dropkick and a pair of shoulder blocks, but Tiger Chung dodges a third and punches him outside. Allen comes in with a sunset flip for two, but the Tiger's up with some punches. Allen whiffs on a cross body, and Tiger Chung drops an elbow for the win. I thought Allen looked like absolute dog shit. Tiger Chung completely carried this match. If they were trying to put Allen over in any way, it was a complete failure. He just looked terrible. it was awkward all over the place. Tiger was trying to thread this together. I thought he looked solid. Just a nothing match, Scott. I went with a big, stupid, hard dud.
I also gave this a dud. It's very hard to give a dud to the pride of New Haven, Connecticut. Jerry Allen.
Sounds right.
there's better things in New Haven. Tiger Chung Lee with wrestling boots, which I thought was kind of interesting. He did wear boots, though, when he was in World Class as I forgot what his name was in World Class, but he wore boots there, too. It was not a good combination. It was pretty awful. There's nothing really much to say here. It's fairly terrible. I didn't get your – I don't think there was even a runtime here, but it couldn't have been more than 5 minutes.
Kim Probably Duke four and a half was minutes his name? And
Kim Duck. Yes, Kim Duck. Thank you, Kim Duck.
Not Johnny Chung Lee.
What's that?
Not Johnny Chung Lee.
Not Johnny Chung Lee. Johnny Chung Lee. No, it was Kim Duck. I just remember now, as you said. So there you go. Jerry Allen loses. Poor guy. Don't admit that you're from New Haven if you lose again. Tim, really not much to say here. Did you binge watch Jerry Allen matches before you watched this one?
I didn't have a chance to. I apologize. I did write down that Tiger Chung Lee versus Jerry Allen was a match that happened on this show. And it was a dud. So, hat trick.
Awful. He looked awful.
He really did.
Did not look ready for this at all. And Tiger Chung's pretty good. Like, he's solid. You know, it's not like this isn't a case where they stuck him in there with the Frenchie or something that could give him nothing. I mean, the Tiger's pretty good. Maybe Tiger should have been in there with Rangins.
That might not have been too bad, actually. Yeah. I would have been game for that.
He would have probably bumped and moved around for him at least.
Exactly. So and it would have made the offense look good. No, I agree 100%. I think Tiger Chung would have been a good. I think Jerry Allen getting beat up by Ron Bass would have been perfectly acceptable.
Fucking disaster. All right, let's head back to the ring, and we'll talk about our big rematch with the World Wrestling Federation Championship on the line as the greatest professional athlete in the world today. Hulk Hogan takes on the Ugandan giant Kamala, and this would be Kamala's last MSG appearance for nearly 6 years, gentlemen. So we'll not be seeing him again on the show, I don't believe, unless he pops on Saturday's main event, but I don't think so. I think we're done with Kamala here. Huge rematch from last month, no DQ this time. The crowd is hyped for this one. The title seems in jeopardy after the last outing in December. The Wizard and Kim Chi lead out Kamala, as his manic presence still exists for the whole entourage. Gorilla thinks Kamala's nearing 500 pounds these days. Hogan comes out with some war paint on his face and gets a huge reaction. Kamala jumps Hogan as he enters the ring, mauling him, whipping him with the title belt over and over. Hogan ducks a shot and punches away, and then levels Kamala with the title as the crowd's just going nuts. Hogan decks Wizard and chases Kim Chi into the ring, but Kamala pounces and whips Hogan with the belt again before unloading headbutts, kicks, and chops. The crowd tries to rally the champ, but Kamala slams and splashes Hulk for a close near fall, which the crowd bit on. Kamala heads up top but backs off and comes back inside to maintain control. He slams Hulk again, but this time misses a splash to a pop. Hulk mows through the challenger with clotheslines and bites him before choking away with his wrist tape. Hogan drops Kamala with an atomic drop and slugs the challenger to the floor. Hulk comes back and works over all three men as Gene wants to know who's under that kimchi mask. Back in, Hulk slams Kamala but whiffs on an elbow drop. Kamala chops and kicks away some more but seems a bit lost as what to do to put Hulk away. Hulk sneaks to the corner and busts out a packet of powder and throws it in Kamala's face. Hulk then slides out and wipes out Wizard and Kimchi again, comes back in, bashes Kamala with the Wizard's horn, and drops the leg for the win. Hot, red-hot brawl here. Manic pace, tremendous atmosphere. Kamala bringing the goods, felt like a real monster contender, and Hogan comes off like a conquering hero that would do whatever it takes due to the stipulation that's in place. I loved Hogan going after Wizard and Kimchi again over and over, keeping them at bay after last month. I thought that was shrewd. Anytime he had a minute, he ran out there and just wiped them out. And a fun series. There's a really good usage of Kamala. A little bit sad to see him go, but I thought he was, you know, really good. He came in, did his work, had two big matches with Hogan and MSG, and I went 3 stars on this one, Tim. I really enjoyed it.
Didn't this feud draw, like, disproportionately good national money? Like, not Hogan Orndorff money, but way better than you'd expect for
I think you're right. I think they did pretty damn well. I mean, Hogan was pretty hot, probably coming off Orndorff would help, but I think Kamala was believable. I mean, that December match, he destroyed him. You know, he was believable as a potential threat. So,
and I was sort of questioning and wondering how much of that is, okay, is it like just a Hogan formula match where you could plug any guy into the Kamala role and it's going to do that just because of how Hogan was positioned and perceived at this point? But I don't know. There is a lot to it in terms of the intangibles. You've got the Kim Chi and the Wizard out there too and their shenanigans. I sort of felt like Hogan maybe should have been seconded by the Wizard from Conan the Barbarian with the way he was painted up with the war paint. Perhaps he was resurrected backstage after that loss in December, or that beatdown in December. But in any case, this is a perfectly entertaining little match. I think it does exactly what it needs to do. It's the right length. No real dull spots or anything. I went 3 stars as well. It was a dandy of a match.
I actually gave it 3.5. Your your official time. It wasn't ridiculously long. Let me see. 7:56. Perfect time for these two. Gorilla gets so confused when there's like these kind of stipulations. Obviously, like no DQs are not common back in the day, but he's like yelling at the ref to take Kamala's weapon away, and then he had no problem when Hogan had the weapon and was beating the crap out of him like 2 minutes later. Mm-hmm. Gorilla gets so confused when these no DQ situations. I kind of like watching when Hogan, you know, relatively speaking, since we see it 9 years later, I kind of like when Hogan wrestles a little dirty. I think it's something kind of different, something refreshing that he has no problem rolling his sleeves up and having a, you know, go a little extra to get a win when he's able to, you know, legally. I think it makes for a better match. I think it's a different side of Hogan that you don't see a lot. And it was I thought it was really cool. I think this one may go down as one of Kamala's best matches, I think, of all time. He's moving well. I mean, he's acting. He's not looking kind of dopey. He's moving around in the ring well. He's putting some good moves on Hogan. I mean, I really applaud Kamala's effort in this match. One of his best matches ever, I think. And I think Hogan was a good foil for him, and vice versa. Easily one of the most surprising opponents the first, you know, few years of Hogan's run as world champion. I don't think anybody expected the matches to be this good. So I applaud that from both those guys. As for the end of the match, the Andre stuff was good because it really hadn't been talked. It had been kind of only talked about on a pseudo-national scale. They didn't really, like, bring it down to the local house show level. So it was kind of neat to see, you know, Andre and Hogan. And you know, him and Gene, Gorilla and Gene were kind of playing dumb. So it was fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
It was fascinating. I really liked it. It was something that you normally don't see Vince do. Take a national storyline and kind of, not dummy it down, was what I'm thinking of. Kind of put it down on a local level, even while it's growing. We're not even in the storyline technically yet.
Right.
And to put it at a local level is very, very different, something you don't see all the time. So I was very happy with that. I thought that was pretty cool. And, you know, it's the Gardens. If you're going to do it anywhere, you're going to do it there. So I enjoyed it. Great, great match. Hogan looked awesome again. But I think you have to watch this match if you can find it. It's easily one of Kamala's best. And I've been watching Kamala right now in 82 Mid-South. And he's okay there. But I think this is one of his best matches. Easily. I think Hogan really got, you know, when you're going to give a Kamala match 3.5 stars, and I think they've earned it, you got to give Hogan a lot of credit for it. But Kamala definitely deserves a yeoman's amount of work for making this a really good match. And the crowd was really into it. After the fucking slough of crap that they've watched so far, I think they really earned a good title match. So Hulk Hogan retains his World Wrestling Federation Championship in an exceptional match with Kamala.
Yeah, and then after the match, we get some big things popping. As Andre the Giant comes out to the ring, picks up the title belt, me and Gene and Gorilla Monsoon assume he's there to congratulate the Hulkster, present him with a title. Hogan holds out his hands, but Andre just stares at it, and then at Hulk and tosses the belt to Hogan before walking off as the crowd boos him. Gene and Gorilla call Andre aloof and say this is just his style. Everything will be okay. Every little thing will be okay. I love this. I thought this was fantastic. It really makes you wonder kind of what's going on in Andre's head. Why is he here showing up? Like you said, though, it's MSG. It's really well done. So I just thought this was perfect. I thought they couldn't have done this any better than how they did it.
Yes. Sorry. I jumped. I apologize.
No, that's okay. I wanted to get my thoughts and Tim's out there so and give the official description. But yes. What did you think, Tim?
Go ahead, Tim.
I was just wondering, is this the first hint or foreshadowing of what's to come between these two?
I think so. I think the only other thing that we've really had is the hinting of Andre's suspension being lifted and Bobby being in the room. Like, they've kind of mentioned that. I think that's kind of been talked about. But that doesn't really tie to Hogan. And the pits that we've seen, I don't think, have had anything to do with Hogan and Andre yet. I think we just had that one where they get the trophy. They said they were going to give the trophy to Hogan. So I don't think – no, I think this may be the first salvo. Do you think otherwise, Scott?
I don't know. Do we have the – what was the date? You had it earlier. What was the date for that Superstars? What was the one that you said earlier? Because you mentioned something about the trophy.
117 is when Tunney gives Hogan the trophy.
Right, so 2 days before this.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that's the first.
And Andre says, that's where he says, 3 years as champion, it's a long time. That was that.
Well, yeah, well, when does Andre get the bigger trophy? That's the next week?
The following week, smaller trophy.
Smaller, that's what I meant, yeah.
Small trophy. I think it's the following, week. Yeah, it's the following week. Because February 7th is the big one, and we'll get to that on the next show. But, yeah, so that Saturday on Superstars is when that previous one is when he did the 3 years as champion. It's a long time. So the seed
cool.
was there. So
very cool.
Yeah. So if the Garden viewers watched Superstars 2 days before, they had an idea what was going on. Slight idea. All right, why don't we take a break? JR, I got to be honest with you. The tag and Hogan Kamala, otherwise this show's like a one. I mean, thank God that there's something redeeming in this first half, because it's been pretty terrible.
Yeah, and the Andre moment helps as well, buoy things. But, you know, it's in-ring-wise, it's been one of the worst shows we've seen in a while. And we've seen some bad ones, as of late. But, yeah, no, not good.
Not good. What do you think, Tim?
Glad I could join you tonight, guys.
Yeah, Kelly's like, I'm having some more Canadian goose.
He's goose hunting with Brad Ringens.
Yeah, Brad Ringens.
I didn't go in with super high expectations. It is a house show. On the other hand, it's MSG. But, I think of house shows that I've attended, and they're usually, like, at best, two-match shows with nothing offensively terrible, and you figure you maybe got your money's worth, unless I've been to just some really atrocious house shows. But no, this is not great, but it's not killing me either. So I've definitely seen actively worse wrestling and things that definitely challenged my attention span more than this.
Exactly. Well, we'll take a break. We got three matches remaining, and we'll see if we can somehow save this. But first, let's take a break, because
promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com. And we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Gary Michael Capetta, and this is the Place to Be podcast with Scott Riscola and Justin Rosero.
All right, Nation, we're back looking at a very dismal January 1987 Madison Square Garden house show, and just talking about this, listening to this, is just giving me the shivers, giving me the shakes, shaking me right down to my core. And also being shook down is, of course, the one and only Greg Abbott. You hear him crooning beneath us as we welcome you back in to the show. And, of course, that means it is time for the Criscolo Pop Culture Corner. Have at it.
Thank you, JR. And, yes, so if you didn't know this song, or you knew this song because it was on the radio a lot back then, and you didn't know who sang it, you thought it was, you know, like Atlantic Star, one of those R&B artists, you know. Nope. It's this mysterious guy named Greg Abbott, and he was the number one song in the country. The list came out 2 days before, January 17th, that Saturday, and it is the number one song in the country. Number two, up three spots, was our pal Robbie Neville, a little C'est la vie,
C'est la vie.
Number three, moving down a spot, Notorious, by Duran Duran.
And Puff Daddy.
And Puff, yes, exactly. Number four, the previous week's number one, which was our number one a couple weeks ago when we had the Saints main event, Walk Like an Egyptian by the Bengals. Number five, for those that were watching Family Ties, everyone knows what I'm about to say, little At This Moment by Billy Vera and the Beaters. Number six, Control by Janet Jackson. Number seven, our girl Madonna, Open Your Heart. Number eight, one of the strangest videos in MTV history, Genesis, Land of Confusion. That's the one with all the weird puppets. And number nine, Is This Love by Survivor. And then our song that we played last week, Everybody Have Fun Tonight, Wang Chung, down to number 10. So there's your top 10. Greg Abbott, Shake You Down, is your number one song in the country today in 1987, January 19th. Okay. Three movies, JR, much less than what we had last week, much smaller. And all of them actually made some decent money, too, so... the number three movie of the week, these all came out on Friday, January 16th, a action film. It made $6 million. It is called Wanted, Dead or Alive. A song we may actually get to know later on in 1987. But
yeah, hang on, because there's a lot of things called that. So.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes,
we've got Rutger Hauer and Gene Simmons in this.
Looks like it. God, he's jumping over my shit. Yeah, Kelly and his goose back on here. Nick Randall is a Los Angeles-based bounty hunter and ex-CIA operative, asked by a former coworker to help track down terrorist Malak al-Rahim. However, al-Rahim is looking for Randall, and Randall's employers are telling him where to find them. This results in the death of his best friend, Sergeant Danny Quince, and his girlfriend, Terry, eventually forcing a showdown on the waterfront. Starring, as you may have heard, Rutger Hauer, Gene Simmons, Robert Guillaume, Mel Harris, William Russ, no one else really of note. Any thoughts on this one, Tim?
I thought it was a Western.
Starring Clint Eastwood.
That does not sound like a Western from the description.
No, it's not.
Okay.
All right. Well, your number two movie of the
it
weekend.
It actually was, too. Nick Randall is a descendant of character Josh Randall, who Steve McQueen played in a TV series, Wanted Dead or Alive, in 1958. So it seems like it's kind of a trickle down.
And Mel Harris, by the way, is a woman, in case anybody was interested.
Okay.
All right. Number two.
Play Terry, who got killed.
Yes. A thriller suspense film made $12,640,000.
Hang on. She also had one, two, three, six husbands. Mel Harris. She's currently married to Bob Brush.
Okay.
She was married to David Silbergeld, Brian Kilcommons, David Hume Kennerly, Cotter Smith, Michael Toomey, and now Bob Brush.
I thought the first husband you're going to say she was married to David Silver.
I wish.
Oh.
He wished. Right. Don't we all wish?
She would be, sure.
Well, they broke up because he banged Nikki in the beach house, so that's why. That's
exactly right.
That's right.
Divorced.
Yep.
It wasn't his first time either. Well, that... Actually, that was, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, I believe.
Yes, it was.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep. All right, your number two movie made $12,640,385, a thriller suspense film titled The Bedroom Window.
Speaking of
the beach house.
Silver,
yeah, so The Beach House.
It looks like it's a remake. Psychological thriller film. Terry is having an affair with his boss's wife, Sylvia. One night after an office party, they're together, and Sylvia witnesses an attack on Denise from Terry's bedroom window. She does not want to expose the relationship, so is reluctant to talk to police. Terry, wanting to help, gives the police a description of the attacker, but is not able to identify him during a lineup. Nonetheless, he soon discovers who the attacker is. After another murder by the serial killer, he becomes the main prosecution witness. Starring the one and only illustrious Steve Guttenberg, Elizabeth McGovern, Isabel Huppert, Frederick Coffin, while Sean, of course, Guttenberg was on this season of Ballers. So if you're looking for some updated Guttenberg to get into,
very interesting.
It's on there.
Interesting. And the number one movie of the weekend, a comedy, made over $20.2 million. It is called Critical Condition. It's the one that had the Fat Boys in it. Made very well.
No, that was Orderlies, wasn't it?
Disorderlies, yeah.
This has a someone a little bit more famous than the Fat Boys. Kevin Lenahan is an African-American con man framed in a jewel robbery in order to escape custody before he fakes insanity and then poses as a surgeon, Dr. Eddie Slattery, at a local hospital where he switches places with the administrator, Arthur Chambers, during a flooded power outage before Kevin takes charge of the hospital and tries to maintain some order in his unorthodox way. And starring, of course, as Kevin Lenahan, is Richard Pryor, Rachel Tikotin, Ruben Blades, Sylvia Miles, Randall Tex Cobb, Bob Saget is Dr. Joffe.
There we go.
Yeah, Wesley Snipes is an ambulance driver. So
I think it's Tikotin.
Tikotin.
Whatever.
That's the shit.
Anyway, Richard Pryor's in it, so that's why it made so much money. And that's it, JR. Those are the only three movies that came out that week. This is the bye week, as Mean Gene mentioned, for the Super Bowl. And Super Bowl 21 will be this coming Sunday from the Rose Bowl in Pasadena between your NFC champion New York Football Giants and the AFC champion Denver Broncos. Let us go to the hardwood today in the National Basketball Association. Tim, what's your NBA team? Do you have one?
Oh, no. Actual sports. I've got nothing to add to this segment. Absolutely not.
Okay.
Basketball. That's like that that worked shoot sports entertainment thing. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, it's Rodzilla. Yes, exactly. Mm. Anyway, there were eight games on this evening.
Just assume he's a Blues fan like everyone else, you just guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Eight games in the NBA on this evening. Your high score, actually Magic. Magic Johnson had 42 as the Lakers beat the Nets 126-115. Now, the reason we were talking earlier about Martin Luther King Day is because the Knicks actually played at the Garden today. They beat the Celtics 111-109, even though Larry Bird had 35 points. The Knicks won by two, which kind of had us talking yesterday about, was the Nick game during the day and this was the night house show, or was the house show a matinee and this was at night? And our good friend, Mr. J. Arsenio D'Amato, said that they really didn't get into the whole, you know, Martin Luther King matinees for, probably another decade, I suppose. So we're not quite sure. But, I mean, I'm going with the common sense. The Nick game was probably during the day, I'm guessing. So we'll assume that the Knicks were playing during the day, and then they switched it up and went from the court to the ring. But the Celtics, the Knicks did beat the Celtics 111-109, even though Larry hit 35. So those are the eight games. There were eight games in the NBA on that evening. In the NHL, Tim, that's the sport where they play on ice. Just wanted you to know.
Oh, yeah. That's why the floor is sometimes ice in the arenas. They talk
exactly.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
It all comes together.
Don't touch Kelly's Lanny McDonald bobblehead. Our Whalers played JR. They beat the Canadiens 5-4 in overtime. And Mr. D'Amato, speaking of Mr. D'Amato, his Rangers, they were on the road out in L.A. against the Kings, and they played to a 2-2 tie. And I realized I did this last year, and I had not done it at the start of this season, so I'll do it now. I was doing the weekly college basketball top 10. Your top 10 as of this week, your number one team in the country, Iowa. I'm trying to remember who was on the Hawkeyes. 2 through 10, North Carolina, Indiana, UNLV, Purdue, DePaul, Syracuse, Temple, Illinois, and Clemson. That's your top 10. And that is it for your pop culture report. Pretty cut and dry, straightforward. So
right.
Let's sadly not stall anymore and see if we can salvage this show.
Let's do it. Jimmy Hart hits the ring before our next match. As that the Hart Foundation win tonight and are able to pin Davey Boy Smith, they will own half of the tag team titles. So we'll see. And as things degenerate from there, from bad to much, much worse, welcome in Lanny Poffo taking on the Red Demon. Big time cool. It was Red Demon, right? Yes, I believe Red Demon. Big time cooldown match here.
Yes,
Poffo and his. Huh?
It was. No, I'm just confirming if you would.
Poffo and his perm and turtleneck jacket are back in the house against a mysterious demon. It looks like he walked right out of Job Lot with that outfit on. Poffo reads his usual poem talking about New York winning the World Series and soon the Super Bowl. Poffo works through some basic offense as demons moving in slow motion, bumping around. Gene wonders who's under the hood and says it could be a member of the Broncos. Demon ends up on the floor and slowly climbs back in as his job as he meanders on aimlessly. Gene and Gorilla rambling about Demon's tights, wondering what the material is that they're made of. Poffo gets an atomic drop and tries to rip off the mask. Demon takes an object out of his tights and jabs Lanny's throat. Lanny comes back with right hands and chokes and again goes to the mask. Gorilla talks about how he tried to rip off a mask one time and he finally did, and the guy had a second one underneath. This is how pedantic this has been. Gene is talking about the dignitaries in the crowd as Demon works some basic offense. Poffo comes back with an Irish whip and gets a roll-up. But Demon is in the ropes. Demon turns the tide by choking Poffo with his wrist tape as the match is setting us back now about two decades. Demon does some weird strutting around in between even more awkward offense. Gorilla and Gene talk about Ricky Steamboat's recent run as this drags on and on, or recent return, I should say. The referee discovers Demon's choking tape, so Demon digs in his tights and loads his mask and decks Lanny with a headbutt. The crowd is really just turned on this now, finally, as Gorilla questions why the ref didn't check Demon before the bout. Lanny mounts a comeback and again tries to yank off the mask before drop-kicking Demon to the floor. Gorilla credits Lanny's cardio as Demon meanders around. Demon goes back to his tights, but Poffo catches him and slings him to the corner. Poffo goes to the mask, but Demon headbutts him with the loaded mask again and gets two. Demon whiffs on a back elbow off the middle rope, and Lanny follows with a slam and somersault splash off the top for the win. Thank God. This was fucking brutal. Demon was awful. And I'm guessing, I'm assuming, or being told anyway, who it was Jose Luis Rivera. So not one for his highlight reel. Way too long and awkward, slow, waste of time. Maybe if Kelly was here, he would have found a way to give the masked guy some love. But I went with a pure, unadulterated dud. And I thought Demon was one of the worst performances we've seen. And that is on a card with Frenchie Martin and Jerry Allen. Somehow Demon found a way to fucking top both those guys. I thought he was awful here. And the match sucks, Scott.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking horrendous. I believe I gave it a dud as well. And I gave it a half star. How about that?
Oh, my God.
I think maybe for Poffo's hair. I don't know. But it was pretty fucking. 14-38 this match was. Oh. Gorilla says this is the most lethargic he's ever seen the demon. Feel bad for the poor bastards that were the demon before he had to be this guy. Crowd should not have been treated to this after the Hogan stuff, but I know you need cool down matches, but this is just, and of course the referee's getting bashed as usual. I don't know. Lanny, I thought, did the best he could. He had a couple of decent flips, so I'll give him the half star for that. But otherwise, this is awful. This is the problem. And we've talked about this a couple times in the past with Kelly about the whole splitting of the rosters, like why they had to go all the way to fucking Lincoln, Nebraska, instead of having some guys wrestle here. I just don't get it. if you got a big card at MSG, why are you like sending everybody else everywhere else? I mean, it boggles the mind because it just made this card so much worse and left with nothing in the Mecca, while, you know, Savage and Steamboat are wrestling in some toilet in Augusta, Georgia. Like, I mean, I don't know. It just makes no sense. And I think this card suffers because of it. I think there was no need to have to send all these guys to other parts of the country today. So, and that's why we get a piece of shit like this. That's why we have, you know, the poor Red Demon. I noticed that if they might as well just had, like, Rivera as a heel. Nah, that would have been terrible. Half star for me, Tim, pretty much for charity for Lanny, you know, maybe for a couple of flips.
Yeah, I mean, no love for Lanny's Swanton Bomb that he won the match with.
That's fine. We've sure seen it 55 times already, so it's not as impressive after it's that. True, yeah. How long was that shit fest?
1438.
Oh, God. That and the Frenchies, a half hour of absolute dog shit garbage on this card.
All right, well, I have a theory about the Red Demon. Would you care to hear it?
I guess.
So, the Red Demon... And I'm sorry, spoiler for an upcoming show. You guys will get to it in about 10 years or more. The main event of SummerSlam 1994, Undertaker versus Underfaker, right? And big question surrounding where did Underfaker come from? Well, my theory is that he is from an alternate dimension, was summoned by Ted DiBiase. And this dimension, it's proportionately smaller than our own, so that's why he didn't match up, you know, size-wise with our Undertaker. Well, the Red Demon is from that dimension as well, and you know who he is. He is none other than the Demon Kane, or as he appeared in 1987. So that's your retcon. That's my headcanon for this match. That's how I brought it up to a full quarter star in my assessment here. I mean, you got to figure he's a few degrees removed from Arcane, understandably, but I think it works. I think it does. And as for Lanny Poffo, he sort of looks like the missing member of the New Day in his outfit here. Quite striking. So this was way too long. Not exactly Flair Steamboat. Not even Alicia Fox versus Melina, I'm afraid. So let's move on.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
I would agree.
I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
You have to admit it was more entertaining than the match.
Oh, God, yes. The match was awful.
Yeah, that's true, too.
I mean, it could have been Kane. I mean, the work rate. No, I mean, Kane's better than this guy. Right? So do you think it was, like, developing Kane? Like, he hadn't really learned anything yet? I'm not sure how these time zones work.
Yeah, definitely. He's still, you know, burn scars, Kane, okay. Basically.
Yeah. Then he should have maybe burned in the fire. This is what we had to deal with.
Well, you know.
All right. Next up, let's see if we can save things a bit. As a feud continues from Saturday's main event, it actually started back in December on the circuit, rolled through that Saturday's main event, continues here as the Junkyard Dog takes on the King Harley Race. Race and Bobby head out with that regal music accompanying them. Gorilla says he's never seen a king with an elastic band holding his crown on like Race has. That Gorilla is like the best part of this whole show, by the way. He's been a highlight.
I know, he is.
Carrying a lot of dead time. Heenan demands everyone bow for the king and is met with great heat. Danny's in the ring, but officials come down and reveal that he was not assigned this match. He's forced to go to the back to a big pop. JYD and Grab Them Cakes get a massive pop, too, and the crowd's all fired up. Finally, something to cheer about. JYD opens up hot, slugging Race to the floor and battering him back inside before pelting him with headbutts. JYD grabs a chin lock, and Bobby stops in on commentary, says everyone will bow to the king. Race breaks free and gets a gut wrench for two, but JYD shrugs off the right hands and unloads his own, sending Race crumpling to the mat and eventually to the floor. Race comes back in, takes over with punches and knees, picking up a near fall as the crowd rallies the dog. JYD fires back again and sends Race right back outside. JYD follows and they head trade headbutts and right hands on the floor until JYD rams Race to the post. The dog slips in the ring and wins by a countout, leading off to a pissed off Bobby screaming at the referee. Race attacks JYD from behind, beating him with his own chain and wrapping it around his throat so in face so Bobby could yank on it. This is fun, and I mean, it's probably exacerbated by the shit we've seen so far that maybe made it seem a little bit better. But I thought it was a good brawl. Never really settled into much of a format, just a lot of back and forth. But it was hot brawling, and the crowd loved it and gave a lot of heat to the feud. I liked the beat down at the end with the chain. I went 2 stars on this. Again, it could be a product of the card that we've been watching. But I thought this is pretty solid. What'd you think, Tim?
It was okay. I mean, compared to the last match, it's a miracle. But to be honest, I had to take a break after the last match and sort of came in on this fresh.
Flushing the computer down the toilet.
Didn't have a lot to offer, I'm afraid. Bobby elevates a lot of the material here, as he does with most of what he's involved in. I mean, getting involved on commentary and just his antics around the ring, as usual, you sort of find yourself paying more attention to him than the match, especially one of this caliber. What must a man like Harley Race think of this plum robe and crown getup? I mean, it's Harley Race. He's got the ancient prison or Navy tattoos. There's a lot of cognitive dissonance there for me.
He seemed again, okay with it though. Like, I don't know. He seems to be buying into it, I guess.
I guess a lot of people think of his swan song as being, the cage match against Flair. He loses the title in 83, but
right.
You forget that he really hung around for a while after that and had this run in the WWF. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to call it a total blind spot for me, since I have seen more of it in recent years, but I sometimes think he doesn't get the credit that he deserves as being still a pretty solid hand at this point, or at least, a dependable worker in situations like this. But as for the match, I don't know. Let's call it a star. Doesn't do a great deal for me. Scott?
Your official time, 5:27. And you can definitely tell that this wasn't, this was growing. I mean, we've seen on Saturday's main event. It's been talked about on the Cindies, and now it's at MSG. You know that there's a blow-off somewhere, and we all know where. But we'll allude to that as we go down the line. But it's amazing how bad things have gotten in 5 years. I was watching a Mid-South episode of Mid-South today from, I think it was June of 82, and JYD is trim and he's moving around the ring and he's, crowd's crazy. Fast forward ahead here, almost 5 years and 4.5 years. And he's a mess. He's an absolute mess. As for the thing you said, Tim, about, would Harley Race be caught dead with the robe and everything? You know what? It's Harley Race. Guy knows the business. I'm sure he's. I don't know if he was crazy about having to dye his hair blonde, but I thought it was kind of interesting. But I do like that Gorilla makes fun of the stupid rubber band strap because it's just it's so obvious. It looks so stupid. He looks like a logo for Devil Dogs or something, or some kind of Tasty Cakes.
I said he's always looked like the kid from Bad Santa grown up.
Yeah.
I've used that joke a lot, so I am sort of obligated to put it out there, I think.
Funny. But yeah, it's fine for what it is. It's JYD. He's as good as he's going to be. I don't know how much better these two could get, JR. I mean, it's not great here, so I don't know how much more of an upgrade you're going to get.
Yeah, no, it is what it is. I've liked the feud so far because they both kind of brawl well, and Race is such a pinball bumper that it kind of fits well with JYD's limited offense. It's just pretty much punching and headbutts at this point. So I think he makes the matches watchable. I've just really enjoyed Harley since we started watching him. Like, I thought everything we've seen him in, he's been pretty entertaining. I thought it was a pretty good premise, too, with Race wanting everyone to bow down and Dog being too proud. You know, it's like,
yep.
I don't know, it kind of fits. Yeah, I mean, do I wish Dog could go at a better clip at this point? Sure. But I think for what it is, it's not a bad. It's a good high-profile feud for Harley. Outside of maybe, like, Tito Santana, like, who else could Harley really be feuding with right now higher up the card than JYD? I mean, there's really no one else that fits. And I'd rather JYD be working with a guy like Harley that can bump around and work with him versus someone that's, whatever, just kind of there and can't make JYD look good. Like,
right.
It's almost like the Funk template, right? I mean, Terry was so good at bumping around and creating a wild atmosphere that it made those JYD matches watchable because it's Funk wrestling himself. And it feels like maybe a slightly poorer man's version of that with Harley, where he's so good at bumping around and brawling that he's hiding a lot of JYD's deficiencies. So
that's,
I think it's
true,
a good feud,
yeah,
that I've actually enjoyed, and I've liked seeing the depth behind it versus just a match at WrestleMania.
True. And I like that you said that it's kind of hiding the fact that JYD is just a big fat toad who can't really do anything anymore. Right. And that's how good Harley is too. And anything with Bobby is top notch anyway. So, and I believe the Fink, I know they go to commercial. It's kind of weird how it was cut, the version right. We watched, but
yeah, he runs through the matches for next month, but we'll save those for our next show.
Exactly. Yep. Yep.
And that takes us to our main event, as the Hart Foundation, the number one contenders, taking on Davey Boy Smith and Billy Jack Haynes, because Dynamite Kid had suffered a serious injury in a tag match December 1986 in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. While recovering in the hospital from back surgery, Dynamite would later recount that Bret Hart showed up and stated Vince McMahon had sent him to get the tag titles. Dynamite refused, and shortly after checking himself out of the hospital against doctor's orders, he met with McMahon, who requested the Bulldogs drop the tag titles to the team of the Four Legion. Dynamite refused, saying he would only drop the belts to just one team, and we'll see who that is very soon. But here, the Hearts are a little pissed off, gentlemen, because they should have been challenging for the tag team titles tonight, but Dynamite is indeed on the shelf. Time for our final match. Danny Davis is the official this time around, not sent back. Gorilla talks about him being under great scrutiny, and Fink clearly announces him as a ref. So something's big here with Danny Davis. Like, we don't usually get ref announcements from the Fink, and he clearly says who it is. And it actually caught me off guard, because at this point, I thought they were pretty good at the detail. So I was surprised they didn't have Fink, like, announce the referees all night. You know what I mean? Like, to make it not stand out like the way it did.
Yeah.
But
no, I agree with that. Yeah.
It really stands out. So they're pretty much saying, like, he's a fuck. Jimmy leads out the Hearts to some really good heat, and they are followed by the makeshift team of Davey Boy and Billy Jack, replacing Dynamite, joined by Matilda and played out by Rue Britannia, as always. Very warm welcome for them. Matilda goes after Jimmy, but the mouth escapes her, and we get some stalling and feeling out before we open with Brett and Davey. Davey overpowers and frustrates Hart early, battering around and crotching him on the top rope. Davis gives Davey some shit as Brett escapes and tags Anvil. Davey tags in Billy Jack, and he and Anvil trade some power offense while Billy's working the arm wherever he can. Davey gets tagged back in, gets trapped in the corner as the Hearts start to go to work, quick tagging, double teaming, busting out some fun heel tactics, pitching them outside when they could. Gorilla and Gene rip Davis from missing everything as the Hearts continue to batter and double team Davey. Davey sneaks in a crucifix pin, but Davis was tied up with Billy Jack and then slowly counts two as the crowd flips out. Davey breaks up a chin lock and then press slams Brett and crotches him on the top rope again. Billy Jack gets a tag and cleans house, but Davey gets in the way. Billy slugs him to the mat. Haynes grabs the full Nelson, and Davey fends off Anvil as a new ref comes down and calls for the bell as Brett submits to a huge pop. I like this a lot. Again, it was all about pushing the Davis angle. It was really well done. Very good at being in the wrong place at all times to allow the cheating, but it made it look smooth. Like, it didn't look obvious or forced when Davis would get caught off guard to allow the heels to cheat or to fuck the faces. Like, I thought he was really good at just being in the right place at the right time, or right place at the wrong time, however you want to look at it. The heat on everything Davis did was great too. It pushed the Hearts and Bulldogs feud, as the Hearts have been elevated finally to the top team, was the Bulldogs start to fade. Match itself is just fine again, but I thought everything around it was what carried it. The story, the heat, everything else. I thought it was really well done. So, I we missed Dynamite from a work rate perspective, but I don't think we missed him from a story perspective. I think this pushed things along nicely. I went 2.5 on this, Scott.
I give this 2 stars. Your official time to end the show was 9:26. Yeah, I mean, this is different than Gorilla Trash and Gil Roman. that's just that's under the table stuff. Obviously, you know, with Danny Davis. I like the climax when Danny Davis actually is holding, like, it's evident now there. He's like holding Billy Jack back to let him get hit, and good job by Billy Jack to dump out of the way and get to the ending of the match. Obviously, this leads to Dynamite, you know, kind of going downhill from a work perspective. This back injury never completely heals, so that's kind of unfortunate. The ending was great. Once again, fucking Anvil gets protected. I just don't understand that, but I guess it doesn't really count at that point. Good way to end the show. Crowd got into it, and the Danny Davis stuff was good, but I agree with you about the lack of continuity. They should have had, like, the announcing of the referees the whole match, but, you know, so it is. Solid. I enjoyed it. 2 stars, and you could definitely, like I said, JR, after we said the Hart Foundation was kind of floating aimlessly through time, they finally are in the spot that they need to be in. What do you think, Tim?
I just found myself thinking, why couldn't Dynamite have just gotten hurt a month later? I don't want to upset the karmic balance by suggesting that he never should have gotten hurt. These things happen, but push it off a month. Come on, give us a proper Bulldogs Hearts match to really save this show. But as it stands, you know, it's non-title. It's got a substitution, and that sub is Billy Jack Haynes. So, I mean, that does drag it down quite significantly. Not terrible in terms of just how it's worked as a match. I will say I was, because I've been watching as much WCW as I have lately, I was totally expecting a dusty finish, but no, sure enough, the faces do go over, no reversal there. So you, I guess, send the crowd home happy. Thought Brett showed a lot of fire in the pre-match promo. We think of Brett as not being the greatest talker, of course, especially early in his career, his WWF career. Later on, you know, you'll see him with the glasses because he was nervous delivering promos, that kind of thing. But here, kind of thought he showed some swagger. So I don't know. Maybe I'm vibing on some heel Bret Hart more than I thought I did, really. So yeah, I mean, decent enough match. You just look at it as what could have been, I guess.
No, Brett's definitely
gave it, 2 stars.
No, I agree. Brett's definitely developing more and more. You can see it in his attitude, the way he carries himself in the ring. He's always been a great worker since he arrived, but he's starting definitely to showcase his personality a little bit more in the swagger. And I think part of that probably comes with the confidence of finally being pushed up the card. You know, we've been talking about this, Scott, how where have they been for the last, like, 2 years? You know, it's like they're kind of around but not really doing anything. It's like here we are finally getting elevated now after all this time. And not only do you wish maybe Dynamite could have hung on a little bit longer, Tim, you also wonder if the Hearts had gotten the push a little bit earlier in 86, if they could have had, you know, some bigger moments and matches versus the other way around even. So it's like they kind of almost waited just a little tad too long to get into the Hearts, elevated up the card, and now they're kind of in this place where Dynamite can't walk. The Hearts are ready to go. And, you know, if you believe the story that Dynamite tells or Brett tells, whoever it was, you know, is it true that they wanted the Nikolai and Sheik to be the ones that took the titles from the Bulldogs, which is kind of weird. So a lot of moving parts
here. Very weird.
But I'm just glad to see the Hearts finally moving up the ladder. You know, we've got the pink and black in place. They seem to have the cohesion down. Like all of the parts are in place now for the Hearts to move up, and they're finally getting them up there.
Yeah, they definitely are. They've got a niche now. They've got a gimmick. You know, they've probably pass the Dream Team as the top heel team in the company.
Sure.
And
yeah,
and there's no doubt that that the belts are going to be around their waist at some point very soon. Yeah, no, that's pretty much that there. The Hart Foundation did skate through 86, which is unfortunate, but sometimes that has to happen for you to get your spot back. And and they're definitely in that place now.
All right.
So there you go.
That is the show. So why don't we do some awards here tonight? Going to start with our match of the night. I had two that checked in at the same rating. That was Hogan, Kamala, and then the Can-Ams. But, I mean, you know, they're different ends of the three-star spectrum, right? So I'm going to go with Hogan, Kamala for sure on this one. It was definitely the most entertaining and biggest match of the evening.
I agree. It was my highest rated match.
Yeah, I'm going to go Hogan, Kamala as my favorite match. Only because it was such an unexpected and pleasant surprise. You kind of expect Can-Am Dream Team to be pretty decent. I mean, it has a higher probably baseline than something like Hogan Kamala.
All right. Our cousin Junior, our worst match of the night. There were a few contenders here this evening. But I went with
Poffo. The rest of the card.
I went with Poffo Demon. I thought that was the worst match. I thought Demon was atrocious. I was done, especially at that point in the card. At least the fucking Frenchie match, you can say, was early. You kind of get it out of the way. And then even the Bass match was kind of crappy, but that was quick. This was late in the show, off the intermission. Just no need for another 14-minute slop between these two. And the Demon just looked terrible. So that was easily the worst match of the night for me. What did you think, Tim?
Yep, agreed. For sustained badness, if nothing else, it's got to be that match.
Yep, I agree.
All right. The Hogan Award, the MVP. I actually went with two guys tonight. One with a tie, and one is Hulk Hogan, who, of course, the award is named after, and anytime he's on, usually gets it. And I actually went with Danny Davis. I thought he was really good on the show. I liked him in the match where he came out and tried to sneak out there to ref, and they caught him. And then I thought he was awesome in the main event. I loved how, again, how his timing was so sharp. He was always in the wrong place at the right time. And I thought he really was, you know, well done, and the heat was great on him. And this is kind of his peak, I think, now over the next couple of months. So I wanted to give him some love because I thought he was really damn good on the show.
I agree. I agree on both of them, actually. If you want to keep the tie, I'm willing to do it because I think they both worked their butts off in their respective. I mean, Hogan's Hogan. He's always going to wrestle big time. But I applaud Danny Davis, too, settling into the role of this shaky referee, Tim.
Yeah. Hogan Award, Hulk Hogan. But if you want an alternate, you know what? I'll go to Fink. He had a good night tonight, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. He was pretty solid on this evening.
He was solid. Yep.
All right.
There we go. All right.
Write that down. All right. And next up is our Uncle Elmer Award for the non-MVP, the worst wrestler in the evening. I went with another tie here tonight. And believe it or not, Frenchie Martin is not one of the guys. Because I feel, well, I don't care for what he was doing. Like, he's just at least doing something that makes sense. I went with Jerry Allen and Red Demon, who I thought both looked over their skis. I thought they both looked completely lost. I thought they were the direct reason why their matches were terrible. You know, both got carried by better workers, and even that only carried them to duds. I thought both guys just looked like they didn't belong in a ring like this. So that's my choices, and I'm standing by it. Tim, what'd you think?
I will go Jerry Allen just because Red Demon provided me with
that's
at least
reason
some
I went against him.
Yes. Yeah, something that I could do something with.
What do you think, Scott?
I don't want to go for the, I mean, they were both pretty awful, huh?
God, they're fucking terrible.
They were fucking terrible. But I'll stick with the tie. I'll go with you on that one as well.
Okay.
They were both pretty awful.
They're two, though. That was like two of the worst performances we've seen outside of like our CD. All right.
Yeah.
Best moment. I thought this was another easy choice. I went with the Hogan Andre stare.
The show ending?
Yeah. Yes. Thank God.
The credits.
I went with the Hogan and Andre with the stare down at the title.
Yeah. No, I think that's hands down. Yeah.
Yeah. Easily.
Okay. And our CD award for the most juiced up of the night, I went with Davey Boy here. Tim?
Yep.
Scott? Okay.
Yeah. It's hard to argue with Davey Boy anytime he's on the card, and that's a category.
All right,
but
so
the fact they did, do we think he was really juiced more than Hogan? I guess so, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I know. I mean, they're both equally juiced. I just, Davey Boy shows more. He's just more ripped. You know what I mean? Like, Hogan's
bulky.
Yeah,
no, bulky. You're right.
I mean, whatever. Either or at this point. All right, so, like, I want to give this, like, a zero, right? But there's actually some decent stuff in here. And when you look at some of the other shows that we really trashed, like December, it had like nothing redeeming besides Hogan, Kamala. And, you know, 2.5 is kind of the lowest I've gone, I think, on one of these house shows. And I don't think it was the worst one we've seen, despite the worst array of performances that we've seen. I don't think it's a well-structured card. I did enjoy Gorilla quite a bit. I thought Hogan Kamala this time was a little bit better than the last time. I liked the Can-Ams. I liked the race match. I liked the main event. I liked Danny Davis. Hogan Andre stare down alone bumps it up a bit. So I actually went 3.5 on this, which, you know, 2.5 again has kind of been my baseline for like real garbage shows. And this I thought had a little bit more, even though you got to slog through some real trash to get there. So again, not the best show we've watched, but I think we, even though this has probably the worst performances we've seen, I think it's not the worst show we've seen. What'd you think, Scott?
Well, I gave that December house show a 2, and that show was horrendous. This is, believe it or not, slightly better than that. And that's only because we had a couple of great tags. So I'm going to give this 2.5. I think the Hogan Kamala stands on its own, and that Can-Am tag is really good, but the rest of the show is utter trash. And they really needed to consider not doing this, breaking the roster up and sticking them all over the country, because they left this show with nothing to work with. It's almost like sometimes they take the Garden for granted. Like, oh, you're going to get 20,000 anyway. We'll just give them, you know, a bunch of fucking crap and they'll cheer anyway. And that kind of sucks, because if I had bought this ticket, even I would have been like, But it's Hogan. I know why. You know, it's like Hogan and you could deal with the crap around it. But, I mean, this crap was just real crap. I can't go above 2.5 on this. And this had 2 better matches than that December show, which, other than Hogan Kamala, had practically nothing. So, 2.5 for me, Tim.
I think 3 seems about fair for this show. You mentioned the roster being as sort of diluted and spread as thin as it was. This is not a disaster considering that. I mean, we do have 2 actually what I would consider good matches, mm-hmm. in Hogan Kamala and the Can-Am Dream Team tag match. Yeah, there's some duds in here for sure, but I mean, I didn't have anything dipping into like negative stars or anything like that. It is inessential viewing, certainly, but not the worst thing in the world either. There's certainly been a lot worse out there that you can spend your time on. You got to figure this is, you've blown off some major storylines sort of at the end of 86. You're transitioning into new stuff at the beginning of a new year. So things are a little bit in flux, you know, graded against, some of these factors. It's, like I said, at least worth a 3.
Hmm. All right. Aren't you generous?
Yeah. It was a hell of a time, for sure. It was.
Yes.
Sorry, Tim, to do that to you.
Quite all right.
Yeah, rough going. So, Scott, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. No show next week. Got some traveling in there. Not sure what night that week. Likely in the middle of the week, probably Wednesday or Thursday. And that'll be the February show. Kelly will be back for that one. And then, in 3 weeks' time, we have our big Halloween special. And, Tim, maybe we'll be hearing from you again. We'll see. Man, that'd be so long between appearances.
Possibly.
And then after that, we'll get back into the groove with the March 87 Saturday night's main event. So subscribe to all of our audio feeds, Place to Be Nation Wrestling, Place to Be Nation Pop, and Pro Wrestling Only. The big return last weekend of Jeff Learns Wrestling after a few months off due to vacations and to schedules. We reviewed all of WrestleMania 3, so Jeff had some pretty good takes and thoughts, and I thought it was a lot of fun talking to him. Check that out. Also, a new written column I will be doing, the evolution of ECW. Doing it on my own. I'm just going to go pace by pace. I don't know if it'll be any kind of regular schedule, but I'm doing it category format. So there's some fun categories. I'm tracking every appearance ever on ECW because I think there's going to be a lot of cool people that come in and go. So check that out. The Extreme Evolution series by myself on the history of ECW. The first episode's up. That was the first one that's on the network. Episode 1 of Hardcore TV from early 93. So check that out. Tim, anything going on in your world you want to talk about?
A little bit. In addition to the aforementioned Halloween spectacular coming up, I sat down with the manager of Place to Be Nation Pop, Todd Weber, for his program, Conversation Comics. So we're actually reviewing some nearly 40-year-old X-Men comics. So if that is your bag, check it out. It's the Chris Claremont, John Byrne run on Uncanny X-Men. We spent 2+ hours going over one issue. So this is a very, very, very deep dive into some old comics. Yes. But if that's your bag, check it out. And a little bit later this month, I will be joining Jennifer and Miranda on Geek and Sassy, also on the Place to Be Nation Pop feed. That will serve as a little bit of a an appetizer, an idea of what you can expect, perhaps, on the Halloween special coming up. So check that out. Probably going to be the week before our Halloween show. So I guess I will be making the rounds this month, and should be a lot of fun.
Someone's got to do it. I also want to plug a newest Making the Cut, too. Aaron and I ran through some more contenders for the Greatest Dirty Wrestler Ever project, which you can still partake in. The deadline has been set December 31st, 2017, so still plenty of time to get your ballots in, plenty of time to do research. Aaron and I touched on Kane, Undertaker, Goldust, X-Pac, and Trish Stratus, so check that out. Mm-hmm. If you want to be part of the conversation, just let us know on social media, facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, Twitter, Place2BeNation as well. Scott, what do you got going on? Any main events coming up? What do you got?
Main event this week, probably drop Thursday. Got a couple of guests hopefully in the hopper. We'll recap Hell in a Cell from Sunday and talk about this debacle of a global impact on-demand thing that that came out today and the mess that's kind of surrounding it. So we'll get into some different stuff this week. But, yeah, that'll be on Thursday night, main event. We'll drop.
All right, very good. So for Tim and Scott, I'm Justin. We're out. Talk to you in 2 weeks' time from another MSG trip. Kelly will be back. Talk to you then. Until then, subscribe to our feeds. Enjoy our shows. Participate in the conversation. Be part of the PTBN family. Shop with us, PlayStation.com/Amazon as well. Take care. Talk to you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Fuck Jerry Allen.
Still the master of the martial arts.
Come on. They were singing
back to back, good, belly to belly. Well, I don't give a damn, cause I'm stone dead already. Back to back, belly to belly, it's a zombie jamboree.
One female zombie, she wouldn't behave. See how she's dancing out of the grave. In one hand she's holding a quart of rum, the other hand was knocking a conga drum. You know the lead singer starts to make his rhyme, while the other zombie's rocking in time. One bystander, he had this to say: it was a thrill to see the zombies break away. And they were singing back to back the mall, belly to belly. Well, I don't give a damn, cause I'm stone dead already. Back to back, belly to belly, a zombie jamboree. And they were singing back to back the mall, belly to belly. Well, I don't give a damn, cause I'm stone dead already. Back to back, belly to belly, a zombie jamboree. Hey, back to back, everyone we sing back to back, and belly to belly, then back to back. Oh, 1, 2, 3, 4. Hey, what a zombie jamboree. From Times Square to the Statue of Liberty, uptown, downtown, zombie jamboree. Whoa, 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 yeah, yeah. There's a high wire zombie between the world trades, a King Kong zombie on the Empire State. But the biggest zombie's Tokyo to Rome, the zombies who call the city home. Back to back, belly to belly. Well, I don't give a damn, cause I'm stone dead already. Back to back, belly to belly, it's a zombie jamboree. And they were singing back to back, belly to belly. Well, I don't give a damn, cause I'm stone dead already. Back to back, belly to belly, a zombie jamboree. I need the chorus. Back to back, belly to belly. Well, I don't give a damn, cause I'm stone dead already. Back to back, belly to belly, a zombie jamboree.
Back to back, you go. Belly to belly, well, I don't give a damn, cause I'm stone dead already. Back to back, belly to belly, a zombie jamboree. Sing the chorus. Back to back, oh, belly to belly, well, I don't give a damn, I'm stone dead already. Back to back, belly to belly, a zombie.